This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, it's wow, a little bit of country for you. BB Rexha with Me and the Bee with Florida Georgia Line. It's just some really good voices, really. That's why I wanted to play it for you. Time for us to get stuck into some news. CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning. Mabale Moloi, what do we got? What's on the agenda?
Whew, okay, so this is sad and shocking. King Mswati's 8th wife, Senteni Masango, has died after allegedly committing suicide. And
imagine how shitty it is to live with him if you commit suicide. You're a queen. You're in the royal family. You live in a palace and you need to get out of there. You kill yourself. Well, imagine that.
Yeah, sources close to her have revealed how unhappy she was. She has alleged before that she was being abused, as well as being neglected in the royal household. It was alleged that the king had not approved of her attending her late sister's memorial service just a week ago. And it was rumored that she lived alone for more than 3 years in this big mansion. You know, you talk about the royal palace, with not a single visit from anybody. So
wow,
it would sound like she was suffering from some depression.
Isolation.
Isolation, depression, and then, of course, the allegations of her being abused. So, yeah, she was found dead early over the weekend, barely a week after burying her sister, whose memorial service she was then not allowed to attend by the king's order. And, yeah, she had overdosed on, you know, medication wildly used to block the long-term chronic pain of some rheumatic conditions, and it's also used for treating depression. So yeah, and she was just 18 years old.
Well, there's something wrong with that in so many ways. I mean, there's something wrong with the fact that there's this guy who calls himself a king and he gets to choose all these really young women to hang around with him, and then he refuses to let them even attend the memorial service for their sister, keeps them in isolation. He obviously thinks of them as possessions. I mean, I can imagine no worse fate. If I were a woman and King Mswati took a liking to me, I'd be like, oh my God, this is like in the old days when Genghis Khan would walk up to you and go, I'll have your daughter, please.
My mistake. She was 18 at the time that she was chosen to become his 8th bride.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
How old she now when she died? Do we know? What a horrible story.
Yeah, it's just sad, man.
That's just a horrible, horrible story. I feel bad for her. Didn't know her, don't know anything about her. Just, this idea of one human being more special because of who their father and mother were than another human being is really messed up, isn't it? You're a king. That's crazy. And I mean for everyone. I mean, like, Prince Charles, he's not a special human being. If anything, he's not as good as some of us. Right? Don't you agree that, like, the idea of just who you inherit your genes from shouldn't mean you're able to lord it over other people?
I mean, but that's exactly what it means.
But like, as much as I like Downton Abbey and The Crown and all that kind of stuff, I completely agree with you. It's all
just dumb. It's like, and I'm big on tradition from the point of view that it's a cultural thing. And I know in Swaziland, there's a lot of tradition and culture, and you know, it's a very sophisticated kind of culture in some ways, and then in other ways, it's completely weird, and unsophisticated and misogynistic. And you hear a story like this, you just want to. Your heart breaks for this poor girl who's sitting there. She's called a queen. What kind of life did she have?
Well, according to reports, she was unhappy.
A horrible life.
She was unhappy, according to these reports.
If I said to you, Mabali, I want you to be the queen, you'd jump at it, right? And you find out what it's really like.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah, I think also the novelty of that whole royalty thing has worn off over time.
Well, it's such an old school way of looking at the world, isn't it?
Mm.
It's just, it seems anachronistic that these people over here have special kinds of privileges, and these people over here have special titles, and these people are just the ordinary people.
Yeah.
I mean, King Mswati doesn't seem to me to be exceptional in any way. If you know one, can he fire a bow and arrow better than anyone else? Can he drive a car better than anyone else? Is he able to, I don't know, play luge better than anybody else?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, if you're going to be the so-called chosen family, whatever, you should have something. Like when Prince Charles or whoever, Andrew, went to the Falkland Islands, he wasn't there fighting Argentines. He was having creme brulee down below. But he went to the front lines, yeah, with a Bordeaux in his glass at every different stage.
Yeah, be good at something. Like, have something that other people go, wow, it's useful. It's good to have him on our team. He's adding value. I don't see that from King Mswati or Prince Charles.
I mean, even the English royals, they spend like 10 billion euros on a horse for the Olympics and they still couldn't get a medal. And we all know horse jumping and show jumping, all that kind of stuff. It's about the horse.
The horse, right.
Still couldn't get gold.
Was that Princess Anne? I think it was.
I think so.
Yeah.
Wait, are you asking if she was the horse?
No. Oh.
Meanwhile, there's a perfectly good Camilla in the stables, champing at the bit for Olympic success.
Okay.
She's a bit of an old man. Wait, are you talking about Princess Anne as the horse?
I'm sorry, I thought we were talking about Camilla. I just got my royals confused.
Oh, that's funny. Don't get me wrong, I love history. I think it's interesting. I think it's fascinating. I think it's really, really cool. And the more you know about where you come from, the better. And if you are the king of the Swazi people, if you're the king of the Zulu people, I think that's interesting.
Interesting, but ultimately they just steal things.
But like King Goodwill Zwelithini, what value is... He's a xenophobe. He's an old school chauvinist. Don't tell me these people are like necessary. No one in KZN, their life would not get any worse if King Goodwill wasn't there.
Well, it'd probably get better because that tax money could go somewhere else.
I don't know. It's just crazy. And then you hear about Mswati and this wife and you're like, this guy isn't even nice to the people he marries. How could he possibly be nice to the people he rules over? And you know, there are only a few absolute monarchies left in the world. Swaziland is one of them.
What does absolute mean? And who gets to decide?
Like, he makes the rules. He is in charge. Everything stops with him. Parliament don't get nearly as much say as he does.
Mm.
He's the king. Like in an old medieval feudal sense, he is the king. You owe everything to him and he decides to give it to you or take it away. One of the few absolute monarchs left in the world. And you can see what kind of a person he is by the way he treats his wives. So, let that be the closing statement on this matter. What else is going on?
Well, nothing upsets a nation more than hearing that their tax money is being used for nefarious reasons.
Yeah, kings.
Okay, then. So a private trip that was taken to the Middle East by, Donald Trump's sons is being questioned after it has been revealed that it has cost American taxpayers more than $73,000 for this trip.
Only $73,000.
You know, every time you hear Middle East and politicians, you know that there's something dodgy coming up next.
Well, because that's where they go when they're doing really dodgy
things. Yes.
Go to the Middle East. Because first of all, it's in the middle.
Oh, okay.
And so, because everybody gets there, you know. That's where they discuss the dodgy deals. So, get into Dubai, which is the slimiest, most artificial place on earth. And they all sit around in Dubai and then they discuss who's going to get a cut of this and who's going to get a cut of that. Certainly that's how our nuclear deal was hammered out.
Well, that's exactly where the showdown went down. Trump Jr., along with his brother Eric, met with the team at Trump International Golf Club in Dubai. And CBS has reported that the expenses are to cover the real estate scion's secret service detail, hotel rooms, car services, all that nice stuff from March the 26th until April the 8th. And they're saying that it has cost American taxpayers more than $73,000. And they were attending a wedding at that. But guys, you are Trumps. You have all the money in the world. Why are we using Like, why aren't you using your own money? Is the simple question.
Yeah, you're probably fine because in order to pay the Secret Service, you need to be a vendor with the White House, and that's why they does it. So Trump will hide behind that. He'll be like, I would pay my own money, but I'm not registered to use the Secret Service. Otherwise, every other common person will want to use them.
I don't know that Donald Trump's children should have Secret Service, especially those two sons. They went to some, I think they were in Botswana or somewhere, and they shot lions and things. I reckon we should have open season on them. No Secret Service. If bad things happen to you guys, you deserve them. I'm not saying people should shoot them. All I'm saying is that if the Trump boys don't have a Secret Service detail, it won't be the end of the world. So this is what they're complaining about, is the Secret Service costs. So just disband it. Then they can go anywhere they want at their own expense. No big deal. Huh? Easy. Sorted. I mean sorted as in S-O-R-D-I-D.
Sure.
And sorted. Donald Trump's sons. Which one is this? Donald Jr. or Eric?
It was both of them.
Oh, God. Were they travel? You get a package deal with them?
No, I mean, they attended a friend's wedding in Dubai.
Yeah.
Dubai.
Dubai. Dubai. Dubai.
So, you know... They're allowed to have fun, I guess. I don't know. Just not on the taxpayer's dime. So, yes, while the Lizard King is busy, you know, answering to all kinds of questions there in Facebook land, YouTube are getting ready to face their own battle.
What have they done?
After a consumer and activist group, or rather actually several consumer and activist groups, yesterday called for an investigation into YouTube for allowing advertising to be targeted at children.
Oh, really?
Which is in apparent violation of U.S. law. You see that law thing? As soon as you break it, then people want you to like to start answering all kinds of questions. So the organization say that although YouTube claims that the site is only for users 13 and up, Google, which of course owns YouTube, generates significant profits from kid-targeted advertising on the video sharing service.
So what's their problem? That they're targeting kids or that kids are on YouTube?
That YouTube is targeting kids through advertising. This is their problem.
Well, then get your kids off YouTube.
That is not going to happen. Did you know that there are child-oriented channels on YouTube? There's one called Choo Choo.
Really?
I suppose these are things that you'd learn if you like have a child around. There's the Choo Choo TV nursery rhymes and kids songs, for example. So there are all kinds of kids channels. And US law says that, you know, certain things are not allowed. And YouTube claims that the site is only for users 13 and above. So, you know, if you look at that whole fine print thing, it would seem that YouTube have caught themselves in a bit of a tricky situation here.
What's it called?
Choo Choo TV nursery rhymes and kids songs.
That's a long name.
That's one of the channels.
All right.
Yeah.
Could it not just be Kid Tube? Maybe I'm oversimplifying this here. Because don't you get Netflix Kids? Like that's just one of the offshoots. So when you go into the home menu.
Yes. There's a yes.
Choo Choo kids songs and other things to detract them from adult things. That's long name.
Yeah.
Just by the way, we've got to close up this Doyen thing because you've started a whole shitstorm. Pippa says, Gareth Doyen refers to a respected or prominent woman and Doyen or Doyen in French to a person.
Okay, so
if you put the E-N-N-E, that's woman. D-O-Y-E-N is a person.
All right.
We learn together. Doyen refers to either male or female. Doyen refers to female only. I apologize, but eat a dick. Thanks, Carl.
Hi, Bo.
Sure, Carl.
It's fiery this morning.
It is your dog every time, isn't it?
It's fiery.
It's Carl typing away.
It's not my dog, Carl, no. No, my dog, Carl, went for a haircut last Friday. He's full of himself. Wandering around the house like he's in charge of everything. So proud. He loves to be clean. He's like, yeah, look at me. I'm the greatest. How old is he now? 7? Ooh. My dog is about 7 years old.
He's an old guy now.
Right, exactly. Still damn cute.
Sure, always.
All right, anything else that's going on that we need to know?
Well, just that the average person around the world spends nearly 3 hours a day watching television. Whoa.
I don't.
Exactly. Who has time? to watch television for 3 hours average.
What are you watching?
This is according to a new report released by Eurodata TV Worldwide, which said that television viewing is holding up despite more and more people watching online platforms like your Netflix and your Amazon. Americans and Canadians are the biggest TV addicts, according to the report. They watch on average 4 hours and 3 minutes daily. What? European viewers came next, watching 3 hours, 49 minutes, just ahead of Russia and Brazil. The data gathered information from 95 countries. And before you ask, I have no idea where we are placed here because we are just simply not mentioned. Asians watch less TV than any other major markets.
Well, it's because they're winning.
Are we even surprised here?
Well, they're on their phones more.
Oh, well, the millennials, yes, Ben. There was mention of the millennials and how they're mostly like absorbed by their mobile devices. Millennials and young adults spending more and more time on their mobile phones because, quite frankly, TV is just far too old for them. And they're often catching up on their programs that way. But yes, Asians watch less TV than any other major markets. They spend just 2 hours in front of the box. In China, that drops to even less than that, under 2 hours.
That's very interesting.
I don't watch much TV.
I don't have time to watch TV.
Also, see, Ben, you watch sports, so that will account for your maybe hour or two every weekend, or maybe more than that. I don't watch any TV. If I'm around a TV and there's news on, I might watch it, but usually not. And my home TV, I honestly stream Apple TV through it. And I listen to music, and occasionally I'll watch a series that I've got from Netflix or something else, and I'll put that up on the screen. But I'm not using TV.
Yeah.
Live television has no role in my life anymore. Anymore. I think if there was a major, major news event, sure, I'd watch it.
I binge watch, and that's only because I, like Monday to Friday, I don't have time. So on a weekend, that's when I'll try and watch something, and then I'll usually just binge watch it because I know that I only have today to watch this thing, so get it out of the way.
It seems maybe that these are people who don't have a lot to do, or maybe they haven't discovered the internet.
What? But Americans.
Like 3 or 4 hours a day. Are you kidding?
The Americans and the Brits are the ones leading the pack here. You telling me that they haven't discovered the internet?
What are they watching?
It doesn't break it down to that much detail.
Americans are watching Roseanne's new show. You know Roseanne Barr?
Oh, is that out now?
She's back. So she was on Jimmy Kimmel talking about the show. Listen to this quickly.
What happened to the rest of our candy?
Funny story. Our insurance don't cover what it used to, so I got half the drugs for twice the price.
What are we supposed to do?
Well, tradesies. I'll trade you 5 of my statins for 5 of your anti-inflammatories, and I'll sweeten the pot by throwing in a couple of blood pressures.
Did you get the pain pills for my bad knee?
Wouldn't be the candy man without the sunshine, babe.
There it is. It's the real house. It's still there. When you walked onto the set, was that an emotional experience, seeing that set for the first time in so long?
I can't. I've looked for the words for it, and I just can't find them. It's weirder than deja vu. It's like we took a 2-week break and came back after 20 years. So much older.
Yeah.
So that's obviously John Goodman and Roseanne Barr talking to Jimmy Kimmel about the show, which has just had a reboot. And they started talking about politics. Uh-oh. And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel at the moment, you don't want to talk too much political stuff with him, but let's see how it goes.
During that
time, it was just like no time. It was like a wormhole or something.
It's been 20 years, right?
Uh-huh.
You ran for president during that time.
Yeah.
I mean, you... And by the way, I do want to say, you were kind of the original crazy tweeter running for president.
Yeah, Trump totally stole my
app. He stole that from you. Yeah.
I ran my whole campaign on Twitter in 2012. And you know what's weird, Jimmy? It's really hard to get on the ballot on account of, you know, corruption and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I was only allowed on 3 state ballots, okay? 3 states, California, Colorado or something, and and Florida. Okay? Okay, three state ballots. I still came in sixth.
That's impressive. I didn't know that.
By the way, two of those states legalized marijuana for recreational use afterwards. So.
I know. I ran on the legalization of marijuana. Absolutely.
Who would have ever guessed marijuana would be so popular?
And I've been paying women hush money for years.
Now, one of the things on the show, which I know, like, a lot of the television critics got very excited about this, the fact that Roseanne Conner is a Trump supporter on the show.
Well, she did vote for the president.
She voted for the president.
Yep, she did.
And she, and that is part of, I don't want to give anything away, but that's part of the dynamic with you and your family on that show. Now,
and in real life.
And
it's like everybody's family is pissed off at each other for one thing or the other.
Is your family mad at you?
Well, you know, we had some pro-Hillarys and some pro-Trump,
right.
And there was a lot of fighting.
Weren't you a friend of, like, a good friend of Hillary Clinton's at one point?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was.
You were.
Yeah.
And what happened that, now I know you're very, very down on her.
This?
What happened?
Down on her?
Well, I think you accused her of being a murderer on Twitter, didn't you?
I did not.
Jesus.
And you know I'm going to find that tweet in the next 40 seconds,
it.
Right?
Roseanne.
So that tweet that you
not,
never tweeted and then
problems.
Deleted.
I had some disagreement with her foreign policy.
I see, with her foreign policy. And you like Trump?
Yeah,
foreign
she
policy.
Had one.
I can see that. Dan's character is not...
Did you agree with her foreign policy?
Listen, never mind her foreign policy. How about Captain Wacko we got running the country here? I mean, foreign policy. I'm shocked, because I know you were a very liberal, socially liberal person in general. I mean...
I'm still the same. You all moved.
We did?
You all went so... far out, you lost everybody. I mean, seriously.
You're probably right, by the way.
A lot of your audience, and including me, I just want to say this, Jimmy. A lot of us, you know, no matter who we voted for, we don't want to see our president fail.
Right.
You know?
Right. I know.
Because we don't want Pence.
And yet we've seen it over again.
You want Pence? You want Pence for the friggin' president?
No, I don't want him either.
Well, then zip that.
She's basically telling him to shut up. I like it. Roseanne.
It is impressive that she has managed to make a name for herself with that
voice.
Pitch of voice. Yes.
Yeah, it's quite something, huh?
Yo, it's like it hurts the ear.
But there they are. They're back on the air. So John Goodman and Roseanne Barr back after 20 years. That's, you want to know what Americans are watching? That's what they're watching. Apparently the ratings for the first episode were through the roof.
Some nostalgia.
Mm-hmm. People like that stuff. Okay, anything else?
Well, there's a restaurant in Canada. Now, you don't think Canada is going to be controversial at any stage.
No.
Not the slightest.
There's nothing controversial about Canada.
I mean, like a protest there is people just saying, could you please stop doing that a little bit, please?
Did you ever see that video on YouTube of a Canadian accident where... a biker gets clipped, his rear view mirror gets clipped by a Canadian driver, and the Canadian driver stops, and they're both Canadian, and then they say, hey man, sorry about your mirror, and then the guy goes, no problem, and he goes, I'll give you my details, swaps details, and the guy says, thanks very much, and they drive away, and that's like road rage in Canada.
Sure. I mean, they must come to the streets of anyway in this country.
Die. Are you kidding?
Well, there's a restaurant called Antler in Toronto, and there's this whole video thing that's gone viral. So there were a whole bunch of protesters, these vegan protesters outside this restaurant. So the owner of the
because
restaurant...
Because they serve meat?
Owner of the restaurant then took a deer's leg, went to the window, and started basically filleting this whole thing in front of them. And they filmed it. And since the video went out online, like, you can't get a booking for this place.
Oh.
People are just lining up to go have dinner there.
Huh.
And this dude, then after doing this, he then got a nice steak and he ate the steak at the window in front of these people.
I had some great steak on Sunday afternoon. Went to a Bri with a couple of friends and it's nothing better, right? So the Antler Kitchen and Bar, which is in Toronto, you wanna know what their menu's like?
I wanna know
it
what
seems quite gamey.
Yeah, I wanna know what deer tastes like.
Well, particularly any kind of deer. You want moose?
Sure, give me some moose.
I wonder what their menu does. Let's have a look here. Let's take a look at the menu.
Well, it looks like the produce of a man who's got a big beard, who's been sitting in a shed for 3 months just shooting things out in the wild.
That's pretty much it. That's exactly right, Ben. Let me see if I can create a little ambience here and we can get something going. You know, like you're ordering in a restaurant.
Sure.
Okay, you want to do that?
Yeah, okay.
All right, let's go to the restaurant and let's see if we can do this properly.
I imagine you would pair deer with red wine, right? Can't be white.
Yeah, it seems like quite a red winey kind of fare.
Quite possibly. Let me, let's get, where's that restaurant ambience that I need? Need like just the sound of glasses clinking in the background, that kind of thing, right? I'm not going to find it now, but here's the menu. Fuck that. I've given up already. All right, so the menu is, they've got, lots and lots of venison. They've got beef, they've got lamb, they've got chicken, they've got, so it's a standard carnivore's delight. And they've got a weekend brunch menu which features a whole lot of meat as well. So take your pick.
Now, one of the points that this vegan demonstration was making, that if you were to see someone trying to kill an animal in the wild, you would stop them. But you're not stopping them from cutting it up into fillets in a restaurant. Is that a valid point? Is that something that we should be putting into our weekly worries?
I don't know that people who are protesting, and I've got sympathy with people who are animal rights activists, because I think that they've probably got the long-term view right and that the rest of us are pretty stupid for eating as much meat as we do. But I do think that you've got to go out and meet the people where they're killing the animals then and stop them there. No point in you protesting once the animal's already dead and being turned into a steak. So, all right, do you know what yakitori is?
Oh, it
there's soy sauce in that.
It comes with noodles.
Charcoal grilled yakitori from the Antler Bar. It's a choice of chicken thigh, wild mushroom, or duck heart. Hmm.
Okay,
they've got Bruce Country Ontario venison.
Bruce Country.
Roasted prime cut with Moroccan spiced ragu, couscous, sesame dressing, and harissa.
What is ragu?
Don't know. Okay. Your rainbow trout.
This place sounds like a treat.
They've got bison ribeye, Mubs. There we go. That's what
don't hear that a lot.
In-house dry-aged creamy polenta, sautéed greens, foraged mushrooms, red wine juice, and the bison ribeye. If you add foie gras, it's another $18.
Foie gras, isn't that where they force feed
the geese? It's not nice.
Oh, shame.
Wild British Columbia albacore donburi. That's togarashi spiced tuna, brown sushi. Do you find sometimes they're trying to make menus sound complicated?
Yeah, really?
They need to charge you more.
Well, guys, it's exactly like songs nowadays, featuring blah, 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 blah. A menu nowadays is like 17 different accoutrements.
It sometimes sounds just very pretentious.
Completely, because the price is ridiculously pretentious. They can't just go steak with a side.
Yeah.
So in order to justify the price, they've got to use like French words and ragu.
I mean, they do have the plainest thing on the menu is the seasonal soup, $11.
What's in it?
Don't know. It just says seasonal soup.
Seasonal. So
it could be the toilet water for all you know.
It could be Tim the vegan from last week.
Decided to.
He got a bit mouthy with me after hours. So seasonal soup.
We sautéed Tim the vegan and then added a soupçon of balsamic vinegar.
You can get vegan ragu this week. So we spoke about the roles earlier.
Yes.
And how, you get greatness from just being part of the family. Well, there's been more momentum around the fact that people are saying Queen Elizabeth is actually a descendant of Prophet Muhammad.
Yeah, she is.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
Well, people don't like to say these kind of things because it's like, you know, how can it be that she's from Islam? But if you go back to the Earl of Cambridge, the Earl of Cambridge apparently married a woman who was part of, she was a Muslim princess called Zayda.
Yeah.
And she fled Spain when things were a bit uppity religiously. And then she turned to Christianity. So these claims are fine. But people are outraged by this, by thinking that she is from the Islamic faith.
Yeah. No, the queen's descended from the Prophet Muhammad. She's also descended from King David of Israel. I don't know if she's just claiming all of this, but she's happy to claim it. She's proud of it. The genealogists of the College of Arms in London will tell you she's descended from them. And from a whole lot older scions as well. There's a speculation and rumor around how reliable these claims are, but they're there. So if the queen is a descendant of Prophet Muhammad as well, she's going to claim it.
Hey, first I've ever heard of
it. But this is why she drinks so heavily, downplay the Islam in her.
What does she drink, Ben?
A lot.
No, but what?
Every day.
Gin de Bonnet.
Gin, what's her champagne. Poison?
Gin de Bonnet.
You know you're a drunk when you've got your family seal on booze. You know, most right. people just have like, oh, that's my favorite. She puts the whole thing on.
All right, guys, I want to talk to Ewan Gunn because we've been planning to speak to him since I met him here in Johannesburg. Remember a little while ago, we were at the launch of Hague Clubman in South Africa, and I got to speak to David Beckham. Well, we also got to meet Ewan Gunn. Ewan's on the line at the moment. Ewan, are you in Scotland at the moment? Where are you?
I am in sunny Scotland at the moment, Gareth. Hi.
Nice. It sounds good. Is there a stream in the background or is that the wind?
Both.
So, look, I was talking earlier to the team about, first of all, meeting you and second of all, whiskey. And when we got into a whole discussion around how you and your job as the global whiskey master and category training manager must have a whole lot of fun with whiskey, but at the same time, it must be a bit like science. It's less about, you know, social enjoyment, perhaps, if this is your job, and more about how the distillation works, what kinds of flavors you pick up. It becomes almost a little bit more refined at your level, or am I wrong?
It's a bit of both, to be honest, Gareth. I truly love my job, as you'd expect. So it's a combination of talking about something that I'm massively passionate about and the world loves. I mean, the world loves Scotch as the world's favorite whiskey.
Right.
But also, you know, having that sort of technical knowledge in the back pocket that when people do want to get into that level of discussion, you can easily do so. So I would say it's a combination of both of that sort of scientific technical knowledge, but also just talking about something that I'm really passionate about and love.
So how did you get into this? Were you just born on the, were you dropped off by the stork on the side of the Spey River and you just started loving whiskey from an early age? How did it all begin?
That would have been an auspicious start, but no. I actually started working with a very small Scotch whiskey company after finishing university, where I studied languages, mm-hmm. and have basically worked in the industry now for, actually this will be my 20th year in the Scotch whisky industry, and in a variety of roles. But the role I work in now, as you mentioned, is a kind of combination of brand ambassador role, and also I head up all of our Scotch whisky training within our company as well. So it's almost a dual role, which I thoroughly enjoy.
Do all people have the ability to appreciate the differences between various whiskies, or is it a very rarefied thing? Does it require a particular palate? Is it a complex thing that most people won't ever understand?
I think it can be complex, but for me, the beauty of Scotch whisky is that it offers such a wide range of tastes, textures, and flavors. I don't think any other whisky, or indeed any other spirit, can offer that. So whilst there are some very complex and challenging whiskies out there, there's also some incredibly accessible Scotch whiskies. You mentioned Hague Club Clubman earlier, which mm-hmm. is the Scotch whisky we very recently launched in South Africa. And that's a Scotch whisky which is designed by the way it's distilled, by the way it's created, to welcome people into Scotch. It's accessible, it's smooth, it's easy to enjoy. It also is incredibly versatile. It mixes beautifully. So whilst there are some Scotch whiskies out there which, you know, are complex and challenging, there are also some wonderful Scotch whiskies there which really are very easy to get into Scotch with.
Is it that there are rules around certain whiskies? Is there a particular procedure? Are you allowed to mix it with anything you like? Or is there a way that you should do it that is tried and tested and that makes sense?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, actually, because you know, we do very often hear people sort of talk at great length about all the ways you should and more often should not drink Scotch whiskey. And actually, drives people in Scotland crazy when they hear that. I mean, if you speak to any of our distillers, any of our blenders, as long as someone's enjoying the Scotch whiskey responsibly, of course, we're delighted. So whether they want to drink it straight up or on the rocks, in an old-fashioned, a classic cocktail, in a long drink, Clubman and Cola, for example, is phenomenal. We're happy. It puts a smile on our face if people are enjoying our Scotches. So there seems to have been, over the years, a lot of almost pretension has been attached to Scotch whiskey. And actually, when you come to Scotland, people are just enjoying it and having a good time. And ultimately, that's what it should be about.
Well, I'm curious, though, what you would mix into your whiskey if you do, and whether whiskey should always have a little bit of water with it, whether it should be chilled with some ice. I mean, are there particular things that do make it better, in your opinion?
There's lots of ways to enjoy it, to be honest. I mean, if you want to sit and really analyze it carefully, then absolutely, you know, drink it with a small splash of water. You find that opens it up quite nicely. But, you know, when I'm out with my friends on a Friday night, I'm not sitting analyzing every Scotch that I enjoy. I'm mixing it with cola. I'm mixing it with ginger ale. And, you know, sometimes having it in an amazing cocktail. You know, a Clubman Old Fashioned is phenomenal. Or even an espresso martini made with Clubman is really, really nice. So there really is no right or wrong way to drink Scotch. As long as you're enjoying it, then you're already drinking it the right way.
All right, good. So we don't have to stress about that.
Definitely not. Please don't.
how many brands come under your umbrella? I mean, Diageo owns a fortune of whiskey brands all over the world.
Yeah.
How many are there? Have you counted them?
I think I would lose count. Yeah. I mean, Diageo is the world's largest Scotch business. And in terms of scale, I mean, globally, last year we sold roughly 400 million bottles of Scotch whiskey.
Yes.
So, you know, we have a huge range of single malts, single grain Scotch whiskies, and phenomenal blended Scotch whiskies in our portfolio. And you think of Johnny Walker, J&B, Bell's, which I know are all very popular in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But then some incredible single malts like the Singleton, Talisker, Lagavulin. I mean, the list goes on. We own 28 single malt distilleries in Scotland. So we're very fortunate because our blenders have access to such a huge range of styles and flavors when they're choosing which single malts to market, but also when they're creating our blended Scotch whiskies.
We're
very fortunate in that respect.
I'm sorry. I've just been reminded that I actually have no idea what is meant when you say single malt. What does that mean as far as the actual process is concerned?
Yeah, no. So a single malt means it's the product of one individual malt whiskey distillery in Scotland. And that means it's a whiskey made using water, barley, and yeast. That's our three basic ingredients that we can use. And it's produced in a batch process in copper pot stills. We also make single grain Scotch whiskey, which Haig Clubman is a great example of. And that is, again, the product of one individual single grain distillery in Scotland made using water, barley, and other cereals and yeast. Very, very simple, very, very, you know, simple in how it's made. Produced in a slightly more advanced way. It's produced using continuous distillation, which makes for a lighter, more gentle style of whiskey. Now, that sounds like a very new way of making whiskey, but actually, we've been making Scotch whiskey at our Cameron Bridge distillery, where Haig Clubman comes from, for almost 200 years. In fact, it's actually Scotland's oldest single grain Scotch whiskey distillery. So although it's a slightly more modern way of production, that's modern in relative terms. It's still almost 200 years old.
There are Canadian whiskies, there are American whiskies, there are Scotch whiskies, and there are Irish whiskies.
There are, yeah, and many others out there as well. Yeah.
And what do you, I mean, is there a distinction in taste, or is it just where they're made?
There's both, actually. So obviously, you know, they are named after where they are made. There are distinctions in taste as well. I don't think any of them produce such a wide range of styles and flavors as Scotch does. But for me, the thing that I particularly love about Scotch whiskey is how tightly controlled we are in terms of the rules and regulations around producing Scotch whiskey. Many of those other whiskies have slightly more relaxed rules, shall we say.
Right.
But also that means that we're very trusted. So when people are enjoying a Scotch whiskey, they know that we've followed every rule and regulation that we have to follow in order to produce it. So actually, that for me is what makes Scotch a bit special. It sort of puts it, rightfully so, I believe, on that pedestal.
Now, I know this is going to be a horrible question because it's like asking it's like asking a parent which of their children is their favorite. But if you had to choose a single malt whiskey, let's say you had one day left to live and you could only have one bottle of any single malt in Scotland, what would you have?
That is a tricky one. You know what, if we're looking at single malts alone, it would probably be Lagavulin. That was the first Scotch whiskey that I was introduced to by my father. So it always holds a dear place in my heart. The Scotch whiskey I probably turn to the most regularly would actually be Johnnie Walker Black Label.
Well, that's a blend, right?
That is a blended Scotch, yeah. And for me, it's just a perfect balance of all of the flavors from every four corner of Scotland working in harmony. So you have some of those delicate notes from the lowlands, you have the smoke from the west coast and the islands, you have the richness of Speyside, all working in harmony. And you know that's partly why it's the best-selling deluxe blended Scotch in the world. Now, if you have to ask me about which Scotch I'm most excited about at the moment, it's definitely Clubman, because it gives me the opportunity to travel the world with David Beckham, which is pretty cool in itself. But it also is aimed at bringing people into the world of Scotch. And for me, that's really, really exciting, because that's the world I've lived and worked in for two decades, and it's a world I'm still hugely passionate about. Well, so something that brings people into that world, that really gets me really excited.
I got to spend a bit of time with you the other day when we did the interview with David, and I asked him this question, but I suppose it's worth asking you, because you're perhaps the guy on the inside track. So he was very involved in putting this whiskey together, and he's very much involved in the design around the bottle and what kinds of things he was looking for and what kind of target marketing that you're going to try and do, who you want to sell this whiskey to. Was he very hands-on?
Yeah, very, very much so, actually. And it's something that, you know, I was surprised and, you know, pleasantly surprised and very, very pleased to see. Right from the get-go, he was involved in not just the packaging design, but he spent time with our blenders, our distillers, looking at how we sort of created the liquid. He was really involved in every step of the process. I mean, we've spent a lot of time together over the past few years, and, you know, I've always been blown away by his thirst for knowledge and understanding of Scotch whiskey. I mean, he very kindly sort of credits me as having helped him on that journey, but actually, you know, many, many experts across our company have spent a lot of time with him. It's been really interesting to see, because he really throws himself into it and just wants to learn so much, and, you know, has strong opinions about certain things, which is great, because, you know, that's one of the reasons we work with him, because he brings a new perspective to how we work with Scotch. He brings that sort of that stylish element, but also that sort of different viewpoint, which I think is really good for the Scotch industry, actually.
And he is fun to travel with. I mean, he seems to me to make a huge effort.
Yeah.
Huge effort with people.
Yeah, he is really fun to travel with. He's incredibly hardworking, and he's just an amazing sort of partner for the brand, because everywhere we go, you know, he travels to every launch market we launch into. He spends a lot of time not just doing interviews, but meeting our customers. I mean, he's a really committed partner and just a really interesting guy. I mean, he's hugely passionate about Clubman and Scotch whiskey, but he's quite a foodie as well. So, you know, it's always interesting chatting to him about, you know, where he's dined recently, different foods he's enjoyed. And yeah, he's a really interesting guy, but also just a really lovely guy as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's always exciting to talk about things like whiskey, which I know my buddy and I care about, and I think there are lots of people in South Africa who love to drink whiskey, and I think there are people all over the world do. What's your thought on what's your general opinion about Japanese whiskeys? Because that's a whole other interesting area.
Yeah, there's been quite a lot of noise around Japanese whiskeys of late. And I mean, I kind of, you know, have a lot of respect for the fact that they're growing and, you know, doing well. And certainly the people in Scotland are quite proud of that, because a lot of the sort of early Japanese distillers actually traveled to Scotland and learned their craft from the people in Scotland. So, you know, they say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. So, yeah, we're pleased to see them doing well. Absolutely. I did mention earlier the fact that many other whiskies around the world don't have the same regulations around how they're made, and that certainly applies to Japanese whiskey. The rules governing it are, I would say, opaque at best.
Right.
So, you know, whilst they are making some interesting liquid, you know, I certainly think there's a much larger level of trust goes to the whiskey coming from Scotland.
Well, I think you've done a terrific job of convincing Mabale and I that we need to go and have one after the show this week.
You should.
And is there any inappropriate time to be drinking whiskey?
Well, it's not even 7 a.m. in Scotland yet, so definitely now, I would say.
All right.
But no, I mean, one of the great things for me about Scotch is that, depending on the time of day, you can enjoy it in different ways. I mentioned earlier Clubman and Cola, a great combination. I mean, that's refreshing in taste. It's, you know, perfect in its simplicity. You could enjoy that at a braai or sitting on the beach. You know, it doesn't always have to be that sort of very sedate, sitting by a fireplace occasion. And that's one of the reasons why I love what we're doing with Scotch now, which is encouraging people to try it in a variety of ways. So, no, I wouldn't say there's any real time that's inappropriate to try a Scotch.
Just one last thing. I've been thinking about what your day consists of. Do you spend a lot of time in an actual office, or are you mostly on the move, mostly moving between the distilleries, kind of doing international trips? Where do you spend a lot of your time?
A bit of all of those things, to be honest. So I do spend a fair bit of time at our distilleries, both keeping up to date on any changes we're making in what we do with Scotch whisky, but also hosting guests, VIPs, journalists from around the world. I do spend probably about half of my time overseas as well. So I do a lot of international travel, which, you know, again, is wonderful. I love travel almost as much as I love Scotch whisky. So, yeah. So definitely my dream job. When I'm not traveling, I tend to work from my home office, which is in Inverness in the Highlands of Scotland. So if any of your listeners head across, definitely make it up to Inverness. It's a beautiful place.
Magic. All right. Thanks so much, Ewan. Nice to speak to you.
Good speaking to you too, Gareth. Thank you.
Go. Ewan Gunn, who is the Global Whisky Master and Category Training Manager for Diageo Scotch Whiskies. I met him when he was in South Africa. And I know that's one of those things that people care about. Mabs was like, you could see, thinking about the taste.
I did love the fact that he said that, you know, a lot of people have made whiskey pretentious, but it doesn't have to be that way.
Right. Do whatever you want with it.
Mm.
I saw a guy once in, I think it was in Bloemfontein. It was during that ANC conference that they had there one year.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a guy order a bottle of Johnny Blue and some Sparletta cream soda. And he mixed the two together. No! He didn't give a shit. He bought that stuff. He was like, I'm going to do what I want to do.
Well, it's your money, your whiskey.
You can do what you want, right?
We should have asked about people washing their hands with whiskey.
What?
Is that a thing?
Yeah, you see those memes, those pictures going around. Oaks outside taverns, they wash their hands with Johnny Black before they drink Johnny Platinum. You just then got whiskey hands.
Wow. That's really trying to make something out of nothing. All right, there we are. Just an interesting dude. Imagine that's your job.
Whiskey master.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I could do that again.
Just to tell you, the signature serve of Haig Clubman and Cola is this really cool drink he was talking about, with the vanilla, the butterscotch, and the sweet toffee flavors of the whiskey that combine perfectly with the sweet caramel of the cola. A lot of people say that that's the best way to do Haig Clubman among all the whiskeys.
You know, people make a big deal about wine and the nose and the bouquet and the taste.
Yeah.
If you're a sort of a novice drinker and you want to go into that kind of stuff, it's actually easy to spot these things. Like you just mentioned there,
yep,
the butterscotch, the vanilla, all that kind of stuff. You can actually pick it up easier when you go through the arts of whiskey tasting.
Well, I told you when I was in Scotland, they tried to teach me. I got some of it into my head, some of it not so much. You have to experience it yourself. And there are so many places where they offer these whiskey tastings, especially in South Africa. You know, wine is a big thing here. But whiskey is also, if you just look for it, you'll find some fascinating stuff. All right. Anything else we want to throw in before we get to Cajiso and the un-news?
Well, the interesting thing about Nkandla,
Nkandla.
So if Jacob's found guilty about all these different things,
yes,
Nkandla could actually be seized because it would be seen as something that was purchased, created, whatever, as proceeds of crime. But what could ever happen to Nkandla if it's not its current use?
Julius said that he wanted to turn it into a school.
Oh, okay.
Remember?
A great school.
It would be a nice school. You've got space there. You've got the fields where the helicopter used to land. You've got
the pool,
of course. Yeah, pool's terrific.
It could also just be the St. George's Hotel of KZN.
It could be. I don't know that I would want to go there.
Do we need and more of those?
And let's not forget, we don't know about how much other stuff there is in Nkandla. Apparently there's a lot more that we don't know about that you don't see on the surface.
No, we were only shown the parts that they were prepared to show us. Yes. But
you know that scene in Austin Powers, the second movie, when Dr. Evil...
No, I don't remember the scene, but remind us.
I'm getting to it. When Dr. Evil flees in that big boy. So he has this big boy restaurant, and then he actually flees in the big boy itself. Imagine things get really bad, and suddenly out of nowhere, one of those kraals becomes a rocket. And he just jettisons out of there. That would be hilarious. It's like it's Ron Darvill going through the sky.
You've watched too many James Bond and Austin Powers movies, Ben. That doesn't really happen. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Kagiso Modupe, and we're going to speak about a new book that he's written, which is called Along Came Tsagani. It's released as a novel. And has just been released in March of 2018. So we'll find out all about that. And of course, you will know Kagiso not only from his show here on CliffCentral.com, the Unleashed show, but also as his role as Mangi in ETV Scandal, and also a bunch of other TV shows. You've seen this guy everywhere. He's really well known. And when we spoke to him last, we caught up on kind of where his career is at and a couple of his opinions on relationships and a bunch of other things. So I like to see him, and it's good that he's able to pop by today to talk to us. And then don't forget, there's a whole lineup of incredible stuff today, including The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg and a bunch of others. So stick around for all of those and more. Let's get to the un-news for today. All right, the big stories you need to know. As Jacob Zuma gets set for a lengthy trial where he clings on to whatever innocence he can, the fate of Nkandla is up in the air, as Ben just said. If he were about to be found guilty, if he were to go to jail, say, you know, because of part of what the findings were, Nkandla could be seized because it was created from the benefits of crime. It's early days, but apparently Cyril Ramaphosa is already thinking that the compound could make a nice home for his prized buffaloes that are valued into hundreds of millions of rands.
Oh, there we go.
Mark Zuckerberg has issued an apology for all the unknown data sharing that Facebook has been responsible for. He issued it in written form, of course, because his species can't pronounce the letter S. The entire act of admitting wrong is also not possible when you are cold-blooded. And finally, Tiller Wakefield wants answers as to why the Stormers are performing so badly on the field this season. Knowing full well that he's under pressure in his position, he's making everyone else feel the same way so he can deflect all the heat. He plans to meet coaches Robbie Fleck and Gert Smal today and has asked them to bring their own lunch, as the boardroom platter will be his and his alone. And if you don't believe me, just Google a picture of Tiller Wakefield and you'll see what I'm talking about. When Ben was talking about him earlier, I looked him up and I was horrified. What a monster. All right, when we come back, we'll speak to Kagiso and take your thoughts and your calls. And if you've got anything to say, you can also WhatsApp us, 0797482090. Okay? Do it.
This is CliffCentral.com.